Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregivers Show on Blog Talk Radio. I am Polly Whitehorn, your host for today's show, sponsored by eCareDiary.com. Today, we are going to talk about lifelines to win against cancer. I am very pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Joni Aldrich. She is the author of 6 books on surviving cancer, caregiving, brain illness, and grief, including her first book, which is called The Saving of Gordon, Lifelines to Win, which is W-I-N, Against Cancer. Joni's husband, Gordon, was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer in 2004, and he passed away after 2 years of treatment. A media producer and co-survivor, she speaks out in seminars and broadcasts, which are live Monday through Friday on www.w4cs.com radio, which is the Cancer Support Network. It's at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Cancer SOS, Diagnosis SOS, Caregiving SOS, Treatment SOS, and Ladies Who Inspire. Well, Joni, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for doing all that you do to help those that are caring for loved ones battling cancer.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, Polly, and thanks for what you do as well. And it gives us a reason to get up in the morning, and certainly it makes us feel good at the end of the day.
That's it. That's it. Well, tell us a little bit about your journey as a cancer caregiver to your husband. And his name was Gordon, am I correct?
Yes, his name was Gordon. Gordon was diagnosed at the age of 43, and so obviously he was a big, burly guy, had never been sick a day in his life, so it was a real shock to us. We were really unprepared for it. And you're thrown into a world where you're really a novice. It's like I had a social worker once tell me that it's like being dropped in the middle of the jungle without any jungle training. And actually, that's what a lot of people experience that go into caregiving because it is so different, and most of us don't have any training. There's a lot that you have to figure out, either have to merge into the new role of caregiving and cancer world, or you have to kind of leave your life behind a little bit to go into that life to help the one that you love. But, you know, it can be particularly difficult, especially in our particular case. Our battle took place 800 miles away from our home, and we had to be in Little Rock, Arkansas at the Myeloma Institute, which we were hoping would be able to save Gordon's life because this was a very aggressive form of cancer. And that can lead to a whole different myriad of different challenges. So it was a difficult journey.
Well, let me ask you, what was your first reaction to the news that your husband was suffering from multiple myeloma?
Well, interestingly enough, we had just taken, believe it or not, a cruise at the end of 2003. And if you look at the pictures, you know, you look at this big burly guy and you're traipsing through Alaska, and there just is absolutely no sign of him having any type of cancer whatsoever. I mean, to look at the pictures, you're just amazed in retrospect. And then, you know, in April, he started having a few pains in his back, and he actually had a tumor that was compressing his spinal cord, and that was the first indication that we had at all that he had a disease. And when he was diagnosed, it was a later stage. It was the highest stage of multiple myeloma. So to put it bluntly, as many people are, many of the 4,500 people in the U.S. today that are going to be diagnosed with cancer and hear those words, "You have cancer," we were shocked. I call it the point of impact.
Interesting. Point of impact. I like that. That's well, I shouldn't say I like it. I think it's a very apt description. Wow. Now,
yeah, you feel like you've been hit by a train.
Yeah. Truly.
And you want to go back to your life the way that it was before, but it's changed forever.
Yeah. Now, what made you want to write about your experiences?
Well, Gordon and I didn't exactly have what you would call an easy journey. In fact, we trusted a university hospital that was close to our home, highly accredited, comprehensive cancer center. Unfortunately, and this is one of the things that I talk about extensively in the Saving of Gordon Lifelines to Win Against Cancer, you know, if you have a rare form of cancer or not, whatever type of cancer you have to do your research and make sure that the facility that you go to, and I know we're going to talk about this more later in the interview, has experience with your type of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
I try to put it this way. There are over 120 different types of cancer, and certainly within those types of cancers, there are even subgroups. Look how many different kinds of breast cancer there are.
Mm-hmm.
It's unrealistic to believe that every cancer treatment facility, even though it says comprehensive, it doesn't mean that they can treat all different kinds of cancer, can treat every type of cancer effectively.
Mm-hmm.
So what you really, really have to do is find the facility that's best for you. And Gordon and I trusted our first, in one that was close to home, it was convenient, major university hospital, and they literally had no idea how to treat his multiple myeloma, mm-hmm. not from the very beginning. And instead of saying, we don't know, and let me refer you to some to a facility that does, they tried to treat it. And after 3 months of treatment, his cancer, or 5 months of treatment, his cancer was three times worse than when they started, did any treatment at all. And he was at a critical turning point. The cancer was very aggressive and had he had over 200 tumors in his bones and growing out of his skin by then. Now, we knew things were going wrong. We had indications. We had gut reactions. We had done research, but it was kind of poo-pooed by the facility that we were going to. But to get to the bottom line of your question, people need information. And when you're thrown into this world and you don't know, there's a lot of difference between a cancer diagnosis and another diagnosis. There are many different options for treatment. There are many decisions that you and your family are going to have to make. You're part of the decision-making process. There are multiple different types of treatment. So The Saving of Gordon and all of my books were the books I wanted handed to me when I needed them.
Most caregivers are paralyzed with fear after having heard the devastating news about a loved one's condition. How would you suggest they deal with it and take a proactive approach?
Well, it's interesting because the caregivers, when I think of a caregiver, I honestly think of the referee in a ball game. As a matter of fact, in The Saving, I actually reference the team effort and each part of the team to a winning football team. And the one that's the referee and has to keep things going and keep things moving forward and organized and, you know, keep things scheduled properly is the caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically, unfortunately, what a caregiver has do in a lot of cases is move past some of their own shock and their own devastation of what's going on in the emotion, and believe me, they will swamp you. And you have to focus on the business end of the diagnosis, because whatever you're feeling, that patient is in twice the amount of shock that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be going through some very, very difficult treatments in a lot of cases. They're going to be on a lot of medications, including painkillers. So the caregiver is the one that has to keep the clear head. So above all things, you know, you have to kind of take it one step at a time, learn as you go. Learn organization, documentation, and the other thing that you're probably going to be doing is medication dispensing. You almost become a pharmacist. In a lot of cases, if there's a terminal or a critical illness, chronic illness, and so you have to, you know, keep up with all that as well. So try to keep a clear head. Make a list of your resources, people that can help you and give you backup when you need it, because trust me, you are going to need help.
Yeah, it's so true, and I love what you were talking about earlier, and it made me think about something that Susan Bida, our CMO, talks about. As a caregiver, you are now the CEO of your loved one's care, and you need to treat that responsibility with that same professional approach, that serious approach, and the same level of organization that you would assume in a professional or career situation.
And that's exactly right. And it's interesting that you know, put it that way, because you know there are a lot of people out there that don't want to be a supervisor or the CEO of a company. They don't want to do that. They don't want to take control. We all have our own individual things that we're good at and mm-hmm. things that we like. And unfortunately, in a lot of cases with caregiving, you're, again, thrown into it and you really don't want to be there. The other thing that's difficult is now you have to, as I said earlier, merge that with your own life. For example, Gordon went through 3 outpatient stem cell transplants. Very, very critical. I'd give him IVs. I had to give him shots. I had never done anything. I had never had any nurses training, any kind of medical training. So I really had to step out of my comfort zone in a lot of cases. I did all that 800 miles away from home, working full-time remotely. And it's very, very hard to keep all of those balls in the air without making mistakes. And mm-hmm. what I had to realize was that, you know, and I didn't have a lot of backup. I found some backup, even though we were a long way from home. People that can have treatment closer to home, they have a lot more resources. And I, of course, you know, I didn't even mention we had to keep all that going, too. Who's going to take care of the mail? Who's going to check on your elderly parents' children or pets? So this is what happens with a caregiver all at once, and you just have to take each individual challenge at a time, just as the CEO would, and find the best solution.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, cancer caregiving is particularly challenging. How can one go about finding the right treatment facility and oncologist? And explain a little bit about your WIN method, which is W-I-N, and it's obviously an acronym, and I would love for you to share that with us.
Well, the great news is W is for web, and that's one of the things that I did in the Saving of Gordon Lifelines to Win Against Cancer is I did the research for the readers on the sites. I went to thousands of websites and found, you know, if you want this information, go here. If you want that information, go there. Because it can be very overwhelming. You could spend a month on just the American Cancer Society website. Mm-hmm. So I have a lot of information in the book, but I'm going to give your readers the number one website that I want them to write this down and never forget it if they are faced with a cancer diagnosis. And this is the W. It is www.facs.org. That is the American Society of Surgeons, I believe it is. But on that website, there is a link that says find a COC, Comprehensive Cancer Accredited Cancer Program near you. Now, Polly, this is the place that I found on the web that has the most information about cancer treatment facilities, and it goes so far that it actually shows you the annual caseload by facility within 50 miles or 25 miles or 5 miles, whichever you select, of any zip code by cancer type.
That is amazing. Would you share that website with our audience again?
Yes. It's and I'm going to give you the complete, too, because there's a way that it'll take you right straight to it.
Okay.
Obviously, http://, www.f, as in Frank, A as in Apple, C as in Charlie, S as in support, .org/cancerprogram. And there's a link, find a COC-accredited cancer program near you. If you, for whatever reason, don't get that, you can also go to the American Cancer Society, call them, and say, I want to find a link that I can get annual caseloads by facility. Now, what I found when I did research in this was very important. For example, there are two major facilities in my hometown in North Carolina, too. And I use this. This is my first go-to whenever I get asked, such and such has cervical cancer, such and such has lung cancer. This is what I use. These are both major cancer centers. And yet, if you compare them apples to apples for, say, lung cancer, one of them, the one that you wouldn't even think, has 100 more cases that they treat on an annual basis of lung cancer than the other one. So this is a great place to go and a great place to start, and it's the first thing that I do anytime that I go to help somebody.
This is wonderful information. I can't thank you enough for sharing that with us. Great.
Well,
great.
Let me go to the I and the M.
Yes, yes,
I
yes.
is interrogate, okay? And basically, if you go back, let's go back to the web for a minute. The people that I'm talking about when I say interrogate are your primary care physician, oncologist, your first oncologist, not necessarily your last oncologist, because I definitely think a second opinion, third opinion, however many opinions that you need is important. But if you'll go to the web and you'll go up to a search engine and you put in questions about, let's just say, bladder cancer, because on Thursday we're having bladder cancer on my show, questions about bladder cancer, then, you know, when you go in to your primary care physician or your oncologist, just putting that in the search engine, you'll have a whole list of questions already set out for you about that particular type of cancer.
That is fantastic, yeah.
And the last is network. And when I talk about networking, I mean start now. You don't even have to have cancer to network. We all know that, unfortunately, due to whatever circumstances, you know, the odds are good that someone we love, or even, God forbid, ourselves, may actually hear those words one day. So start the networking now. When you go to a party or when you're in church and you hear about someone that has cancer, well, where'd they get treatment? Was it successful? You know, and start paying attention to those details. But it becomes even more important when you have someone in your life that has it.
Mm-hmm.
You learn a lot from other people. And, Polly, one thing that I've found is a lot of people don't want to hear about other people's cancer experiences. They feel up front that it's going to be all negative. And yet we can learn so much by history and by people that have already walked our road.
Right, right, right. And if you're not dealing with caring for a loved one that's been diagnosed with cancer, it's almost like you don't want to talk about it. Yeah, you don't want to know about it. It's like you're dodging the bullet.
Well, I think in a lot of cases, people only hear the negative things.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, you know, basically what they always assume is that they're going to hear the negative things. But I had a 14-year stage 3 lung cancer survivor on my show yesterday. It's not always the case.
Yep.
You don't
yep.
always
yep.
hear the negative things, and those are the and you want to hear the negative things too. By the way, you know, you need to know that such and such went to such and such doctor for lung cancer, and it didn't have a good outcome, or they didn't have a good experience.
So that's really, really helpful. So I thank you for sharing us the what the essence of the WIN method is. Now, can you talk about creating a cyber life plan, and can you elaborate on that?
Well, the Internet, as we just discussed, is a powerful tool, and it has much more information on there than even what's in the WIN method. And, for example, I highly recommend that anyone who is diagnosed with any serious disease looks up beneficial foundations and organizations that are available on the web. It's a very powerful tool. For example, one of my favorites, having lost my mother as well in 2011 to lung cancer, is the Bonnie J. Azzario Foundation. Bonnie is a very good friend of mine, and she has this wonderful organization for helping lung cancer patients. But every type of cancer has organizations, usually an international and a national one, to help with situations. And, you know, if you're not web savvy, find the phone number or ask somebody to help you to find the phone number and call them, because they all have 800 numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically your cyber life plan is going to be a group of people on the web that can help you get through. It can also help you do homework, getting ready for your doctor's appointments. It can also help you to find out more about your oncologist or the facilities that might be available to you. So, and you'll always, always want to ask not only your doctor, but there's a place as well on the web that you can research about clinical trials. And by the way, that 14-year lung cancer survivor that was diagnosed in 1998, I had on my show yesterday, her life was saved by a clinical trial.
That's wonderful. That is wonderful. Now, let me ask you, what are your top three tips for being an effective cancer caregiver?
And, you know, Polly, thank you so much for asking that question, because it is so, so very important. Number one, you've got to take care of yourself. And
mm-hmm.
I know we say this all the time, and it can get to be hard, because what you've done is, you know, some days I get to the end of the day and I think, where did today go? And, you know, where did my time in today go? Well, when you are caregiving for someone, now you have their needs over your needs in a lot of different cases. And no matter whether you think you're going to look at it like that or not, you are. So you still got to take care of yourself, because, first of all, if you get sick, then here's the problem. You have to call in the second-string quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's hard for that second-string quarterback to fit to come in. Also, being a cancer caregiver, if you get sick and you pass the germs along to the patient, it can have catastrophic effects. For example, in my particular case, I got a little bit of a cough, even though I sequestered myself from my husband, slept in another bedroom, tried to stay, I mean, literally out of the way. He still got it enough that his particular cancer was in his bones, and he got a cough and he broke a rib, believe it or not.
Oh, my.
So it can be very, very important. So you've got, it's not enough that the patient eats, you have to eat. It's not enough that the patient takes their medicine, you have to take your medicine. It's not
mm-hmm.
enough that they sleep, you have to sleep. And try to do something mentally, emotionally, physically for yourself every day, even if it's for like 5 minutes.
That's really valuable.
So that's kind of the number one credo that, you know, we try to impress on caregivers. This one's important, too. One thing about going to the doctor's appointments with the patient, with a cancer patient, you really, really need to go at every single visit. And there are going to be some critical decisions, and there's going to be times when you should open your mouth and say something and must, and there's going to be times when you need to shut up and let the patient listen, and that can find you biting your tongue, literally. But the bottom line with any kind of caregiving is sometimes you have to let the patient speak for themselves. That doesn't mean if they're saying they're not in any pain and you know their pain level's been 10, that you can't come back later and say, are you sure about that? But if it's something, for example, it may get to the place where a decision has to be made for hospice or palliative care or, you know, going into clinical trial, patient's personal choice is number one above mm-hmm. everything else. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, sometimes you have to be the heavy. And in Gordon's particular case, at the end of his first stem cell transplant, he looked at me and he said, if you had shoved one more piece of food at me, I think I would have hurt you. But you know what? That second stem cell transplant, he knew exactly what I was doing. Mm-hmm. He knew exactly what I was doing. So you can't always be the nice guy. You have to show them love and respect, but sometimes you have to just say, you have to do this because you know that you're in active treatment, and if you don't eat, you're not going to be healthy enough to fight off this thing.
Well, you know, we're just about out of time. We've got about 3 minutes left, and I have one last question, if you could answer it really briefly, and that is, what is the most important lesson that you learned as a cancer caregiver?
Well, any time this type of caregiver is a blessing, it's a gift that we give to someone that we care about and someone that we love. And some days are hard and some days are impossible, but there is no greater gift that you can give another human being. The important thing is to remember that you yourself are human too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. And Joni, I just wanted to say thank you for sharing all of this wonderful information with our audience today. You've just been a wealth of information. And I just wanted to let our audience know that they can learn more about Joni by visiting her website, which is www.joniealdrich.com. And you also have another website, which I believe is www.basketofcare.com, where our audience can purchase your books. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And
great.
Let me spell my name very, very quickly. JoniAldrich. And all of my books are available, either ebook or regular book, on Amazon as well, Polly.
Great, thank you. So I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in today, and please join us next time, which will be Tuesday, July 31st at 2 p.m. Eastern, for our online radio show, Caregiver and Physician Conversation, hosted by eCare Diaries caregiving expert Marjorie Pabst. Marjorie will interview Charlie Pierce. He is the retired president of the Florida Hospital Association, and he will talk about developing a consortium of professionals from agencies, churches, hospitals, and hospices to serve aging members. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, please visit our website at www.ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to your personal care diary tool. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My Twitter address is ecare_diary. Thank you again. See you next time. Bye.